You're listening to the Silicon Valley Podcast.
On this week's episode of the Silicon Valley Podcast, we have my colleague and friend Vincent, who founded and built a global enterprise SaaS software business that was ultimately acquired by a Fortune 250 aerospace and defense company for 14x return on invested capital with an IRR of 48%. He's a visionary, influential, and trusted leader with more than 25 years of experience managing strategic and transformative enterprise initiatives across aerospace, transportation, logistics, and enterprise SaaS software. We talk about when is the best time to start a conversation with an investment banker, what does a merger acquisition process look like, what are some of the common mistakes that business owners have about the valuation of their business, and much more. All right, now let's start this week's episode of the Silicon Valley Podcast. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Silicon Valley Podcast with your host, Sean Flynn, who interviews famous entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, and leaders in tech. Learn their secrets and see tomorrow's world today.
Vincent, I'm very excited to have you on this week's episode of the Silicon Valley Podcast. Now, I've known you for years. You've been a mentor. You've helped me out quite a bit. Can you tell our audience a little bit about your career up until this point before we dive into the questions?
Sean, thanks for having me on today. I've been looking forward to getting this time with you and talking on your podcast. So a little bit about my background. I guess you can look at it in a couple of different phases in terms of the early phase where I worked for some of the major defense companies, major airlines and telecommunication companies out there, also some of the major top consulting firms. And what I found in that early part was really taught me a lot about the whole business background and really the emergence of technology and how that technology is used to propel businesses and also further their strategy along a lot faster. Really focused on that. And during that period of time, got involved with a number of different companies that were out looking to buy and sell businesses in order to augment their strategy. So that's how I got really my first entree into investment banking, really working for some very large companies as a outside corporate development director, where I'd go out and look for companies to augment their strategy in a variety of different areas too. And then also when those companies weren't really helping them, they would spin them off and then I'd go out and sell them for them. And it was during that process where I came across a very small software company. And I always had the idea about how to have a very integrated maintenance and supply chain software that would be specifically built for aftermarket logistics. So take, for example, very large complex assets that had the operational 7x24. If you look at the life cycle cost of an asset, 2/3 of that cost is in its service life. Technology, in order to have that asset operational uptime as much as possible so that the service provider or owner of that asset can gain its full potential value. So went ahead and developed the software to really handle all that and tracking the whereabouts of that asset, track about the maintenance of that asset, wherever it was in the world, and a supply chain that would follow that to support that asset. And that company was called Miro Technologies. It was there where I really got to sit in the seat of being the CEO and chairman of a company and grew it from practically no revenue to revenue that was approaching 9 figures. And it was during that period of time where I was able to bring in not only my consulting background, but also my investment banking background in order to help how to structure that business along its way so that when a time did come for an exit, the company is prepared for that. Exited that business in 2015, sold its Fortune 250 company for a fairly good return to the investment community that was a part of my syndicate. And then really got into back into investment banking, and then into financing and a lot of board work too, because I had a lot of experience in running companies and also in terms of how the capital markets worked, where I could be a very influential member of a board of directors. So that's what kind of leads me up to today. I've had a strong relationship with global capital markets over the years. In fact, they were the ones that helped me with the financing of Miro Technologies. it was a natural fit to come back and join them as an investment banker.
That's quite the journey. So in that process, from what you experienced and maybe some of our listeners that are thinking one day to sell their business or recapitalize or do some type of major transaction, when should they start talking to an investment banker? When should they start, I guess, facilitating a relationship?
I look at the relationship between a company and an investment banker is one that really needs to start out very early in the process. With today's outreach of emails, social media, and that process can start almost immediately. And it's good for you as an owner to talk to a number of different investment bankers, because when it does come time to sell the business, you're not starting from ground zero. It's always good to engage with those bankers over a period of time to talk about valuations, talk about how the market is going, what's the appetite for new technology or whatever that service sector your business is in. What's that appetite out there? And you'll find you'll be able to pick out the ones that are really giving you a good overview and spending that time with you and learning and wanting to build that relationship. Because at the end of the day, Sean, this is a relationship business. And being able to establish that relationship early on, not only with the entrepreneur or founder of that business, but also with the banker. It's how much time you put in together on developing that relationship. The more that you're going to get out of that when it does come time to sell your business.
So how, and I have a couple questions there, such as, because I know during that process, there's so many emotional ups and downs. If you don't have that relationship with the banker, maybe he won't or she won't tell you what you need to hear or what you should hear, more what they think you might want to hear. But I'm also curious about that founder itself and the exit. How well should they start to plan that? Should it be one of those things where from day one, when they start their company, they're already thinking about that exit? Or is it something where they shouldn't even start thinking about it before a company approaches them or looking to acquire them? Like how early,
I think it really depends on, I would say, the background or the structure of the company. And I see it in a couple of different ways. Let's talk about a business that is multi-generational, okay? It gets passed on from generation to generation. As far as when to discuss that exit, really, generally the first generation is really trying to get it off the ground, all right? And get that business to a point where it is fulfilling the second generation's livelihood, that they can embrace that, give that to the second generation. And during that period of time, you might not be thinking about the exit of it, because then what do you do with the family? Because generally when you grow it, more of the family, more of the community is now part of it. So it's really something that I found in multi-generational businesses, they're very proud of what they created. It's not until some particular external life event that happens, whether it's to the original founder, whether it's to maybe someone in the second generation, or maybe it's a change in the market space, or there's a tax implication, that those businesses really start thinking about an exit. And sometimes it is a little bit too far down the path in thinking of it. So on the multi-generational business, I think you need to start thinking about that probably around the second generation. And what is, because as you start having to reinvest a lot of that capital, your own capital back into that business, understanding where the market's going for your particular sector, what some of those new things are happening, I think an investment banker can provide some of those avenues to you, and you can start developing that relationship then. If you're running a company that you're an entrepreneur founder and you have taken private equity or venture capital type money, I think talking about an exit, possibly post your Series A or Series B round, should be something that be part of the board discussions. And why I say that, I think it's early on, because those types of companies are really trying to go after more market growth. And being able to position those for market growth would elevate you with inside your market sector there. And that'll start getting the traction to investment bankers that'll be calling on. And it's good to start engaging them at the time. Your board members or your investors, they all have relationships with investment bankers, and having them reach out to those particular groups. And what you want to do is you want to settle on what you think about what that investment banker, what that value they can bring to the overall company and overall investors that you're responsible for. In both instances, I think you have to treat it on an individual basis. Sometimes you have some external pressures that are going to make you want to sell. And also then you have to, on the private equity or venture capital side, you're really looking at what is that investor return and when is the best time for that to happen.
There was something that you mentioned there about the board that I got me thinking. When do you think there's more pressure to sell the business, when the board brings up the idea of an exit or the founder brings up the idea of an exit? I know every company is different, but in your experience, who normally initiates that conversation? Who normally has the most final decision in it?
That's a good question. I don't think there's a right answer to that. I'll go from my past experience. It was a mutual type of a decision between myself and my investors that it was a time to sell Mero Technologies. We always knew that time was going to come. We always looked at where the revenue was going and when some of those particular points would be. And we discussed those along the way. But you need to have that open dialogue so that the founder isn't bringing it up for the first time, or your board of directors isn't bringing it up for the first time. So I think that it should be a part of the agenda item at least once a year on your board meeting. And I think it's also important to invite investment bankers that particularly look at concentrate on your sector, your business, your industry you're in, and have them come in and present to your board on what that market looks like, where that some of that growth is coming from, what are some of the valuations in that area. And that's a way to start getting an idea when that particular exit should start happening.
Now, you mentioned valuation there. How should because I would guess that the founders, investors, board, employees, everyone's got a different valuation of the company or what they're thinking. Mm-hmm. How would you go about, from the investment banker side, put in a realistic valuation and presenting it to the decision makers? What would be taken in? What thoughts would be there? How would that conversation?
I don't think there's one avenue for discussion. I think you come at this valuation discussion from a number of different areas. First of all, what's the industry telling you? So what are some of the comps in there, both in terms of a private and public comps out there for valuation is one. The second thing is, what is the quality and the makeup of revenue for your business? Is it fueled by services? Is it fueled by product license sales or data sales? You have to look at what that quality revenue is, because that really helps as a part of the valuation process. Third, I think you have to look at your customer concentration too. If that customer concentration is settled on, if five customers make up 80% of your revenue, a potential buyer is going to look at that and it's somewhat risky. If I lose one of those five customers, I'm going to lose a pretty good size of the revenue. So between what the market is feeding back to what they've paid in past comps, what your quality of revenue is made up of, and third, what does your customer landscape look like? I think are three important areas for determining the valuation of a business. And so I don't think there's one formula or one particular way in doing that. So it's a combination of things.
Okay, so say the founder, say the team, they're on board, they're looking to get acquired. This is the first time they've gone through an acquisition. They don't know the process. They don't know the steps. Where might it be unfamiliar territory for them? What might they be unaware of this process? And if you want to dive deep into the whole process or anything,
yeah,
open question here.
Yeah. No, I think that That's a good point. I'll go back to what we talked about a little bit earlier in this podcast is with the investment banker developing that relationship with the founding team. And during that period of time, that process should be reviewed and what are some of the more intense areas that maybe that founder and that their team need to be ready for or need to start building for. Okay. I'd say one of the things when I first went through the process a long time ago, it was just the whole due diligence process, just the breadth and depth of that due diligence process. I remember one time I was on a call. It was myself and the CFO. And there probably was about a good 50 people on the other end of that call. All right. Taking notes and looking through the data room. So that can be overwhelming at times.
And that was before Zoom, right? Now you'd have 50 faces you'd be looking at.
Yeah. I'll date myself. Yeah, that was before Zoom. But yeah. But I think the due diligence process, I'd say also the IP. If you're a technology software company, the IP in ensuring that you as a company or 100% ownership of that IP and that there will be a successful transfer during the sale. Make sure you have the proper contracts written that lays out what that IP, where that ownership lies, and being able to trace where your code is, particularly if you're a software company. I think it's important. A lot of companies I see now have a number of different revenue lines. They have a service revenue line, they have a SaaS component or a software licensing revenue line, and they have a data solutions revenue line. So in all those, in that services, if there's some processes that you as a business have perfected that you use as your competitive advantage out there, that you'd be able to provide that service in a more cost-effective way, that's IP. Any software that you developed internally and you use to manage your customers or to provide your customers with so they can run their operations that more seamless to what you're doing. And all the whole data package is data that you're collecting through your solutions, whether it's through your services that you're doing or you're doing it through a software collection, making sure that you own that data too. So I think that's important during the due diligence process. Just as much as your quality of your revenue and your customer concentration.
Speaking of data and that, here in Silicon Valley, a lot of companies, they'll say we have some patents, we've built some amazing tech, we don't have sales, but we're still worth a ton of money. Help us get acquired. What's your normal answer to those companies and what should they be thinking of? Because a lot of them have spent 2-3 years, maybe they had a successful exit and they put millions of dollars into building this technology, but yet they have no customers yet. But it's at that time in their mind of, we ran out of capital, we got to sell, and none of the VCs are interested in funding us. Like, what happens then? How do you sell off IP?
Yeah, that's unfortunately, I see that more and more happening now, particularly the way the capital raise and the venture and the private equity markets have been over the last, I'd say, 15 to 18 months. But if you have patented IP and no customers, I would have to ask, what's the value of that IP if you haven't had customers that want to pay you? Yeah, that might be some harsh words. It might be some harsh reality, but you need to have that discussion needs to happen first and foremost, before you could even talk about how do you take that IP to market. Okay. If it's IP that's developed, patented, and it is to a point where, you know, there's little to no customer traction, then you either have to go back and redo what your service offering to meet what that customer demand out there is. Oh, it's going to be a non-starter. And I think one of the things that I see in early stage companies is that they're in tune of developing that solution, but sometimes it clouds them in really understanding what the market needs or what their customers want to buy. And when you look at a company that has a library of patents and no customers, that tells me that the founding team didn't really understand what the market was needed, what was needed in the marketplace, and what the customers were willing to pay for.
So going back to understand the market, or just understand in general, how does working with an investment banker add value to the deal? Like, where does that investment banker come in? What are the different areas?
I think that the good bankers really will come in. They'll bring in what they understand from an industry perspective. They'll understand what is happening in the industry. Who are some of the major players out there, acquirers that is, of a business like the one that you'd like to take to market. So that's one thing. The second thing is a good investment banker will understand your financials and understand where they need to look in your financials to pick out value where maybe you haven't realized. That's from experience of that investment banker understanding the marketplace. What are some of the items that in your business that you're able to scale the business for? Because when the banker is out marketing the business, they need to talk about where that value is. And that value obviously could be in terms of the products and solutions that are being offered. That value can be, okay, how can that new acquirer scale the P&L better than you are with more, either more talent or merging that into an existing business unit? So being able to understand what the acquirers want, what that market is willing to pay for it, understanding your P&L and where that could be scaled. And I think most importantly is where can it go? Where can that particular offering today, where can that be in the next 3 to 5 years? And I think if an investment banker can answer those questions through the process, it's my experience that a better than market valuation will take place.
Are there any other areas where an investment banker can help extract value from the financials? And if not, what are some warning signs that an investment banker might be able to see that maybe even the owner may put their blinders on and not admit to, or you know, something where they could say, looking at it going, you know what? I just don't think there's a deal that's here to happen.
Mm-hmm. I think you'll see it in a couple of different areas on the financial end. We'll talk about, are they able to capture all the revenue? That's first and foremost you take a look at. The second thing is you take a look at how they build up their cost of sales, their COGS. And you look at that gross margin. And a good investment banker is going to know what the market is for companies of your size and what that gross margin should be. So if that gross margin is a little bit higher or a little bit lower, that's one of the areas you dive into. And then dive into the operations area. And what are some of the things that are ordinary versus inordinary expenses, particularly in private companies, and be able to segregate those out and look at what some of those, what is the proper G&A, what is the proper product development and R&D type percentage that needs to be a revenue, and kind of look at those and see, okay, how do we get those into the industry norms? And then, you know, being able to go in there and have those discussions with the founder, with their financial team, or the family that owns the business, you're able to pick out, okay, what are some of those items in there that you can have as one-offs? And then now you can start forming a P&L that is in line with industry standards, that an acquirer, whether it's a financial acquirer or strategic acquirer, can really relate to now. It's not going to see things that are out of the ordinary or the percentages around that. So I think it's very important when a banker comes on, or as you're developing that relationship, to inquire about where do we need to be at in the P&L? What are some of the metrics of the business that need to be developed so that we are attractive to those potential acquirers?
How long would it, so trying to think of, if you're able to spot this a year or two in advance, you'd have plenty of time to massage or help out and fix. So it almost makes sense, it seems, to have that relationship very early on in the life cycle of a business. When would it not make sense for a relationship to start? When would it be almost, I want to say, wasting someone's time, but when is too early?
Yeah, I don't think there's can be too early or not. I think it has to be at a point where the founder, the founding team, or the family wants to have that engagement. Okay, that could happen a year or two before. All right. Or that could happen 6 months before they like to take it out the marketplace. The shorter amount of time, the harder it will be to get everything in line. If you start early enough with the idea that one day this will happen, and you start building it more in your routine, so you're building that P&L that is more, it's going to be more attractive to the external market, to the acquirers. If you start building that over time, and you watch where you're spending, and you put that discipline into your organization, and you come up with those key metrics, then it'll be a lot easier. If you start coming in at 6 months before you want to take it to market, I believe you still can get there. It's just going to be a big, deeper dive, and it's going to be a little bit, you know, higher hurdle across internally to get there.
Okay. Say the transaction goes smoothly. Because that's always what happens. There's never.
Yeah, I would say, when's that happen? Yeah.
One, if at any time you want to share some stories, you're more than welcome to. But at the end of the transaction, investment banker walks away. Are they done, or what happens after the final docs are signed?
It just depends. Every deal is different. There might be, generally there's an escrow at the end of the deal. There could be earnout at the end of the deal, where the investment banker is still part of that deal. And so I don't think the relationship ends. Is it as intense as it is through the process? No. But I think it's a good investment banker will have those periodic check-ins with the founding team, now part of probably a bigger organization or a bigger financial group, and just have those check-in calls and how's it going? And if that investment banker did a good job and it was a good exit, that former founding team is going to want to continue that relationship, because if that founding team, after they go through their earnout or they go through their non-compete, they might want to go out and do something again. And then now you have an investment banker out there that you've been very successful with, and you're going to work together on what maybe that possibility is, that next deal.
So for that next deal, we talked right now pretty much an exit. Is a raising capital a very similar process to exiting a business? Is it different? And what are some of the kind of transactions an investment banker can help with? And how similar are all these transactions? How different are all of them?
I think they are different. I think one of the biggest difference you could say between a sales side transaction as opposed to a financing transaction is a level of due diligence. Okay. Yeah, there's customer calls in both, but maybe not to the breadth and depth on the financing side. There's confirmatory due diligence on the revenue as it traces back to the contract. There's the whole IP issue. All right. But you have to look at the maturity of the business. Generally, at an early financing, whether it's a Series B, Series C, or Series D, that level of due diligence isn't as in depth as a complete sale. All right. So that company has established itself in a market space. One of the things from a financing perspective, you're looking at, can that business meet those revenue numbers that they put forth? What are some of the risks in terms of talent? What are the terms in product strategy, revenue growth? So you're looking at those. But what you're looking at is, as you invest that capital, you're investing in that team also. On a exit or sales side process, you're looking at, okay, you're buying that whole package there. And you're going to take that, and that package is going to go with that business and be in the hands of somebody else that'll run it. And they want to be able to ensure that they're going to recreate that as revenue lines and recreate that profit of that business.
Okay, now, being here in Silicon Valley, everything tech. Mm-hmm. How is tech impacting investment banking? How is AI or new software? Is there any types of technology out there that are impacting or changing or being incorporated, or any of your thoughts in the investment banking life, way of life?
I think it is with technology, everything always moves faster. Okay. And in some cases, some of the financial world and also maybe related investment banking, they might be a little bit slow to embracing that technology, because this has generally been a relationship-based business, just like the real estate market. There's a number of different things that in a real estate market that can really, you know, streamline that in terms of blockchain and being able to follow a property from one step to another and have that baked in there, where you're going to eliminate title insurance, you can eliminate escrow type interactions of that. And I see that the same way in investment banking happening. You go in there and social media posts, and there's always someone, well, do you want to sell your business? Okay. Yeah, we'll give you the valuation that you want. And, you know, that's fine for some businesses. They come through somebody's website, and that's fine. But I do believe you have an asset here. If you're a business owner and you have an asset that you've worked so hard to build up, and you and your team have built that asset up, and you have made a change in your market space, you're going to want someone with have a good reputation, has been through this before, and that can take you to a place where you aren't able to get to. All right. Can technology help and assist that? Sure. But when it comes down to it, it comes down to how you're going to work together. I think the whole interaction via Zoom, Google Meets and all that, I think it's all well and good, but I think there has to be quite a bit of time where you are working face-to-face, meeting and developing that strategy to take yourself to exit, which technology can help support that, but there's still a lot of hands-on that we need to be done.
Knowing what you know now and going through an exit of your own, what would you say to a younger Vince?
I'd say this might sound like a cliche. When I look back, particularly in my own instance, I look back at it as a journey. And that's probably like somewhat of a cliche, but it is. There is no straight path to get where you want to go. And you have to be able to pivot. You have to be able to take insight in criticism. And you may have the ability to say yes and no to some of that also. But I think the most important part is that what you put into it is what you're going to get out. And along the way, don't be afraid to pivot and make those quick decisions. Because if you have the right team in place, even if you make a bad decision, you'll be able to correct it quick enough and get back on track.
All right. And with that, I'd like to thank Vince. Was there anything that we didn't cover that you'd like to share or talk about, or final takeaway? Or
no, I think I appreciate the time here, Sean, and hearing me out. I think with the technology coming on faster and being able to support a lot of the things that investment bankers do, I still think there's a personal aspect and a relationship aspect that is needed to be done. And there are a lot in the financial world right now that there's still that relationship building. Does technology help that relationship building, help it quicker, make better introductions quicker? Yes, it does. But there's still some of that element. So I would encourage your listeners, whether you are a multifamily generation business or you are an entrepreneur that has raised capital through the financial areas, to look at that, to look at the investment bankers as being ones that they will help you get that exit and help you along the way, prepare you for it. Too many times people may look at it as a 6 to 9 month relationship. It's not. It's a little bit longer than that. It's a lot more than that, I should say.
Yeah, it's crazy the amount of hours that you spend with your banker through these transactions and the emotional ups and downs and, you know, before and after. And it's a crazy journey.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's a lot of soul searching at times too, particularly if you're that CEO and to be in that seat, because you realize, hey, I worked so hard. I'm getting to the point. And then once you get to the point, you go, okay, it happened. Now what do I do? I think it's a very self-rewarding experience.
Vince, actually, one last question before wrapping it up. You went through that entire process.
Mm-hmm.
How did you go through that transition of going from probably working the hours that you're awake to, hey, I've had my exit. Now there's the next chapter of my life. How did you mentally go through that emotionally? Any advice for those people out there that are going to go through that exit?
Sure. I think it's in you as an individual. If you're an entrepreneur, once you finish one, you're going to want to think about where's my next avenue here? And yes, I went through that exit. There was a realization that of accomplishment, but then you think, okay, now what do I do? All right, where do I take my skill set now? And I chose to take it through the investment banking world to go in and work with companies so they can realize that exit. So they can realize that all their hard work is paid off, or whether it's from the family perspective or returning that investor capital. I think that's where I provide a lot of my expertise and value, is that I can sit in their seats and I know what their experience. And when they do get to a point where, and they do get to a point where frustration, I can have a conversation with them from sitting in their seat from experience.
All right. And Vince, with that, if anyone wants to connect with you, find out what you're working on, have a conversation, what's the best way to go about doing that?
LinkedIn would be the best way to do that. Okay. Yeah, that would probably be the best way. I generally check that a couple times a week, but yeah, so LinkedIn would be the best way, or for you, Sean.
All right. Okay. We'll have Vince's LinkedIn in the show notes. And for our audience out there, I'm not the host of the Silicon Valley podcast. I'm also an investment banker. In fact, I work with Vince. So yeah, go through me to get to him or that. But no matter what, for the audience, check out thesiliconvalleypodcast.com for our upcoming episodes and our archives. And with that, Vince, thanks for your time this week on the Silicon Valley podcast.
Sean, thank you. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you for listening to the Silicon Valley Podcast. To access our resources, visit us at thesiliconvalleypodcast.com and follow our host on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Sean Flynn SV. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, consult a professional.